Off the Ball Breakfast.
Yeah, it's an it's like the people put up the on today's office on the Monday and they're somewhere unbelievable. It's like I am literally at the corner. The player is right beside me.
You don't
me.
Get that much anymore, do you?
No, you don't.
The old today's office.
Today's and office, you're sitting on the beach.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Really enjoyable, really fun.
I'm fascinated by this. That game is unbelievable.
What is the point here?
Falls right off the tongue.
They needed a vibes man.
Now that he's hopped on the magical plane across to England.
Anything you want to talk about?
Oh, topical.
Like you just walking past, it's like five Ali G's. It's like the Power Rangers over there.
Just one of the bigger characters in the Ireland squad as well.
I'm not a back three guy.
That's what it says in the team.
But they don't tend to get things wrong. Which is nothing linear at all in any way, shape or form. Like, I mean, that's not how the world works. Like, you're managing 11 individuals, 11 men of different ages, of different backgrounds.
Hello, hello, welcome back to another episode of Off the Ball's Outside the Box, where we'll be outside the box for a little bit longer. It's been a quiet week since we last spoke to you last Tuesday. We had the Minister for Sport, Margaret Thatcher, Patrick O'Donovan, labelled football fans as thugs and hooligans, and also said that it was his money spent on the pitch at Oriel Park. We all know, though, it was the taxpayers' money. He then wrote back on pausing funding for League of Ireland artificial surfaces on Wednesday for clubs who are looking to build their own Astro pitches. We then had FEI CEO David Carell come out on Wednesday, despite calls for boycotts, that the Irish international team would be fulfilling their fixtures against Israel in the UEFA Nations League, despite both Ireland fan groups and the PFEI coming out against it, and also surveying their members ahead of the two games in the autumn time. Carell called it a divisive issue, despite over 60% of both factions calling for the games to be boycotted. Keith Andrews was rewarded with a six-year contract at Premier League Brentford, the first ever former Off the Ball presenter to do so. Friday came around again, the League of Ireland once again rebelled in force, with banners being shown calling out Patrick O'Donovan amongst others. Saturday followed Friday and a World Cup host in the United States bombed and killed the leader of Iran, a country who are slated to compete in this summer's tournament, playing its games in Los Angeles and Seattle. And that was all approved by the person who was awarded the FIFA Peace Prize by Gianni Infantino. It was almost like that was a bad idea. Moving on, and Hamer Helgrimson said that the altitude in Yerevan was a contributing factor to that poor performance against Armenia. I was there. I don't think it was. David McGoldrick bagged a hat-trick at the ripe old age of 38 on Saturday afternoon. Could he be due a shock recall to the Ireland squad, just as former captain Vladimir Darida has done for Czechia? Sunday saw Martin O'Neill roll back the years as his changes brought Celtic from 2 goals down to draw 2-2 with Rangers at Ibrox. Is Mikey Moore the man that Ireland should be chasing? Monday saw Ireland make their pitch at Tallaght Stadium as narrow as possible ahead of Tuesday's World Cup qualifier with France. So all in all, a quiet couple of days, and it's just 100 days to the World Cup and 23 days to the playoff in Prague. I'm joined by Matthew Brennan, as ever, and Ben Symes. How are we, lads?
Good, yeah. Yeah. That was, I got a bit of a shtick for my long intro last week, but I think you've matched me.
Yeah, I think it was about 3 minutes as well, yeah. I should probably, you know, put these into, like, that little app you can use for words into time.
No, I enjoyed it, though. It definitely covered all bases, anyway.
Fair play. Ben, how are we?
I'm all right, yeah.
All good. Let's get straight into it. No, straight in, no kissing kind of vibes for Tuesday afternoon.
What in the door here?
What Irish footballer impressed you most over the last week? I'll start with you, Matthew. I know you're on Green Scene this morning.
Yeah, I did. You put me on the spot here big time. I know you didn't put me on the spot because you told me you were going to ask me this, and then I opted not to think about it. I'll go a little bit outside the box, I suppose. I won't hit it on the nail on the head, but Finn Azaz had a great couple of days for Southampton, so I'll stick with my EFL head. I scored an absolute worldly midweek for Southampton against Jimmy Dunn's QPR, and then followed it up with a very good performance against a not-so-good Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend. Didn't get a goal or an assist, but topped the ratings on all of the scoring apps, so we all know that that means absolutely everything. And yeah, we'll give Finn Zaza a bit of credit. Southampton have turned the corner somewhat over the last couple of weeks. They were in flying form after they sacked Will Still, and then when they gave Tonda Eckert the job permanently, they struggled for a little while, and now they're firmly on the playoff hunt after losing Adam Armstrong in January. Canadian guy Kyle Larin up front for them now. He'll no doubt be playing some part in the World Cup during the summer. But yeah, Finn Zaza at the heart of everything over Southampton at the minute, alongside Ryan Manning, of course, who we'll talk about a little bit more later on.
Yeah. What footballer impressed you the most of an Irish persuasion over the last 7 days?
The honest answer, because contrary to popular belief, I unfortunately don't sit down and watch Championship every weekend, is probably one of Dawson Devoy or Keane Levy.
Yeah.
From what I saw over the last 7 days, Dawson Devoy, unbelievable on Friday night against Shamrock Rovers. I wasn't there, I was at Richmond watching Keane Levy, so I watched it back the next day. Just, look, I heard some shouts for him calling for the Ireland squad, and I think it's too soon at the moment, but definitely if we have friendlies coming up in the summer and we don't have a competitive tournament, or if we've got Nations League fixtures in September, I know Hamer's already talked about wanting to do an internal camp. I think if Dawson Devoy is in a squad and is in a training camp, I wouldn't have any qualms with that at all.
What does Dawson Devoy bring that maybe the current Irish midfield doesn't have?
He just has that eye for the ball, and I know Finn Azaz has that eye for the pass as well. It's just something about Devoy, like whenever he picks up the ball, he seems to find these spaces so well that you kind of look and you see him in it, and it looks so simple and it looks so obvious when he picks up in the space, but like, you know from playing football how hard it is to be able to do that consistently throughout a game. And then whenever he gets the ball in those spaces in the middle of the park, kind of on the half turn, he always finds the right ball forward. He always takes the tricky ball or the difficult ball. There's never, I'll just lay the easy pass off to the side. He always tries that ball, whether it's up to the winger or it's into the feet of the forward and it's through maybe a gap and it breaks through a line, he always tries it. I think it's something maybe we've been missing, watching someone in an Ireland shirt willing to pass the ball through lines. Like, I know Finn Azaz has done it a little bit for us, but he kind of plays in that winger role. I'd love to see someone in centre midfield playing that type of role. I think if we have friendlies, definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't be totally against it in any way, but just to play devil's advocate a little bit, would you not say that if someone like Jason Malumbi or Jack Taylor or Jason Knight, who we kind of look at not being able, or maybe not being able, but not being willing to play those passes forward through the lines, if they were playing at the level that Dawson Devoy is playing at every week, that we might just see them doing the exact same thing?
Absolutely, but I think international football, and I said it here before, I don't think it necessarily follows club football rules. I think if you've got a player who's playing with a lot of confidence at his club level and you put him into a group and he's playing with people who you could maybe call at a better, like not necessarily better than him, but at a better level. Sometimes when players move up a level like that, they just blend in seamlessly. I think when he went to England, I think he wasn't fully developed as a footballer yet. Didn't fully know his role yet. He was kind of playing a 10, whereas now he's dropped back a little bit deeper into midfield and he's a complete midfielder now. I think if he was in a squad and he was training with those players, I think it would bring his levels up again. And I think also, if you look at how some of our midfielders are getting on in England, like Josh Cullen is out, Malumbi's in a relegation battle, not playing too well, Jason Knight not playing too well either, Jack Taylor kind of in and out of the team at Ipswich, Connor Coventry in and out of the team at Charlton. We don't really have a midfielder, centre midfielder, playing consistent football.
Are all those midfielders that you just mentioned not playing at a higher level though than Dawson Devoy?
But they're not really playing or playing consistently.
They're not better. Better players than Dawson Devoy?
Well, I think that's yet to be tested. Devoy is still so young.
I think all of them are a level above Dawson Devoy at the minute. Now, you would have watched a lot more of Dawson Devoy than I would have done, but I think, like, as well, on the consistency, playing consistently and playing consistently well, I think Jason Knight has played consistently and consistently well for Bristol City since as long as he's been playing in England, I mean, for Bristol City and Derby. I think that's a little bit unfair to throw at him. And I think the only time he hasn't been playing consistently is when he's been injured, which has been rarely.
Yeah, but he has been playing consistently well at the moment. I know it is down to injuries. I'm not talking about Czechia. And I'm not going to be out of time soon. Yeah. But if we have friendlies in the summer, I do not see why you wouldn't try him in the squad at all.
Yeah. I think for this upcoming game against Czechia in March, it looks like Hamer won't rock the boat too much with possible squad selections. That seems to be the noise coming out of the Ireland camp over the last kind of week or so, or last couple of weeks. But yesterday, Hamer Hagrimsson was over in the UK, and maybe it was at the weekend, maybe as well.
Yeah, I imagine it was a couple of days ago.
Yeah, he was speaking to Sammy Smodics,
He's in Inchicore, I think. So it was over the weekend.
Okay. So he was in. He was over in the UK. Did he take in Sheffield Wednesday and Southampton at the weekend? I think he did.
I think he was at. Was he at Sheffield United as well? One of the days.
Yeah, John O'Shea was at a game as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sammy Smodics looks like he could be getting recalled into the squad for March. That issue between. You know, obviously we've seen Kieran McKenna come out a few weeks ago and say that his move away from Ipswich was not really due to footballing reasons. It looks like any issue between Smodics and the rest of the Irish players doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, there's no smoke or fire there, it seems. Do we think Sammy Smodics is the right man to be called back into the squad then?
It's hard to know. Like, I mean, in terms of pure football and ability, like, we know he's obviously got a good bit of that, although it hasn't quite been shown in the Irish shirt for one reason or another. We can debate that till the cows come home, whether he fits into whatever system we've been playing or whether he's just not really been good enough when he has played with Ireland. I think in the moment, the position we find ourselves in at the minute with Adam Eadhead's kind of going to be touch and go as to whether he gets in. We have the news of Mikey Johnson possibly and probably missing out on the game in March. We're a little bit tight up there. Johnny Kenny's not playing at the level he was, although he had an excellent weekend scoring and assisting and getting man the match for Bolton in one of his first starts playing in the front two, which is kind of what he'd be doing with Ireland. But I imagine McBenny would still start, considering even though he's not playing all that much, even though he is fit. Back to Sammy Smodics, that's probably the position in which he's going to be looking to get in at, even though he
in the
would,
front two.
Yeah, even though he probably will be better suited to that kind of role that Azaz picks up centrally.
Ooh, what's he done at Derby in the last couple of weeks?
He's been okay. He's been grand. He's played a lot. He scored once in a defeat, I think. Did he score in a defeat to Hull?
Yeah. Forshaw absolutely halved him as well.
Yeah, he did. And then they had a bit of afters, Shemazel. And then made up on social media. Obviously, former teammates at Blackburn, but. Yeah, he's been okay. He hasn't set the world alight. He's been playing in the 10 behind a big striker, Patrick Ajemang, and then Carlton Morris when he's been coming on. So he's been okay. As regards coming back into the squad, like, yeah, I've said this for a while. Like, I'm not 100% sold on him. I'm open enough on that. Like, but there's definitely worse players you could be bringing in. It's just as Hamer said, he's spoken to Dara O'Shea and Casey McAteer, obviously some of the Irish contingent, the two Irish contingent that were named at Ipswich, who Hamer went over and spoke to a couple of weeks back about kind of what had gone on, what did Kieran McKenna mean, blah, blah, blah. And the consensus was that there's no real issue there. He doesn't see it as too much of a problem. And if he's going and speaking to Sammy Smodics, and by the sounds of that conversation went well, we don't know what they were talking about, but the sounds of it went okay. So I'd be very surprised to not see him in the squad come, when is it, 2 Thursdays from now?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like, as I said, I'm on the fence about Sammy Smodics. I'd be interested to see how it turns out. And I think a lot of the build up to that game, if he is put out in front of media, he's going to be asked a lot of questions about a lot of different things outside of whatever went on at Ipswich. Also his, you know, the discourse, I mean, the fan sentiment has certainly turned. He was a bit of a cult hero for quite some time, and is certainly not that anymore. Certainly, and as far as Irish football fans go, so there will be a lot of questions about that, and I just hope it doesn't serve as too much of a distraction to what already is a pretty big occasion where there's going to be lots of storylines coming and going.
Ben, what do you think? Are you happy to see Smodics back in a Ireland squad?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, I think he brings something different from the other strikers or attackers that we have. I don't think we've probably seen haven't seen the best of Sammy Smodics in an Ireland shirt, probably for the reason that he hasn't played in the right position. I think if you're chasing a game, instead of just bringing on your out-and-out number 9, he gives you something a little bit different, and he can chip in goals, and he can play off the striker.
Would you start him?
No.
I'm asking the question because Chido Zogbene, we spoke about this last week, about he is most likely obviously to be in the front two with Parrott, because obviously Ferguson's ankles aren't holding up, and looks like he'll definitely miss that game at the end of the month. Is there a way that you start Smodics and Parrott up front together?
Well, although you said in March, like, we're so accustomed to talking about Jackie and March.
I was going to do exactly what you just did there. And like, I just want to say something and do that. But obviously
it's like it's been this mythical date in the future, and now
March,
we're finally like
mythical month of
approaching
March.
On it.
He's a really good presser.
He is. Ogbeni has been playing under 21 football. So he, look, he has been playing football, and that is the issue with Ogbeni, is that when he's not playing football, he's not at his best. Mm. Yeah, he has been playing at the level, and he won't be fully match fit. Like, no matter how much underage football you play, it's no substitute for senior level football.
No.
I would rather get 60 minutes out of the legs of Ogbeni and bring on someone like Sammy Smodics than start Smodics and do it the other way around.
Smodics, though, will set the tone. Like, he's a good presser. You get him.
I think Ogbeni can do the same for you.
Okay, and Ogbeni, what's going on? What's this, the latest with his situation, Matthew?
It's the same crack. He's just not getting
his
squads. So
he's not getting, even though Callum Phillips is being suspended.
I actually had been reading as well. I'm not sure if that even applies to him now because the extra loans that were made in January. So I actually think he could be in the squad anyway. I'd have to look into that. But as you said, he's playing 21, so he scored a header during the week in a Steel City under 21 derby. So big one there.
It's not great, is it? This is like a key facet of the team, like that. Halgrimsson,
when things eventually clicked for us in this World Cup qualifying campaign, it was off the back of Ogbeni playing in a front two with minutes in his legs.
You know,
the Portugal game, he was the outlet. The Hungary game, he was the outlet, won the penalty, was in on goal when he, well, you maybe can debate that, was virtually in on goal when he'd done his hammy.
Yeah.
It's not good, no. It's not good at all. There's no point in dancing around that, but I know you're asking Ben about Smodics. I wouldn't have any interest in Smodics and Parrott as a front two now, personally.
Why not?
I just don't think that works. I think it's too far apart from what has been working.
Yeah, we got a couple of questions in on the old Instagram. Ed Burke asks, what's the story with the Smodics situation? We think we've kind of cleared that up as much as we can.
I think Smodics is far better, sorry, just before you get on to the other comments, I think he's far better playing off a striker. And I know, in a sense, he's going to be playing off Parrott anyway. But being the guy who arrives late, what does that really mean? We say that a lot about players, but arriving late into the box, not coming from too deep, but that as well as spinning off your nine. And I don't think the way we play still would get the best out of him in the same way it hasn't been getting the best out of him anyway.
Okay. Orlando Crux asked, what would be the front three against the Czechs? We've kind of touched on it here. So
I think it'd be a front two / three. Like, it'll be...
Yeah.
I'm thinking Parrott, Ogbeni and Azaz. And Azaz is kind of a left winger, kind of drops into the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the issue is the midfield more than the front three. Yeah. I think if Ogbeni is fit enough to start, he starts. Parrott obviously starts if he's fit enough starting. Same as Azaz.
Yeah.
The issue is who are the two that play behind them or alongside Azaz.
Yeah.
But I think that front three is pretty much...
I'm with that too, but it drives me mental because I'm a big fan of Finn Azaz, and I'm not naive to the fact that he's incredibly patchy, both in like his seasons as well as his moments within games. He can be terrible and then do something out of this world that, like, I mean, we certainly don't have a player who's capable of doing what he can do at his best, but I hate seeing him out stuck on that left hand side, which we saw a lot early in the campaign. I think I described it as like a graveyard shift. I don't know if that's something that's acceptable to say in this modern age, but that is essentially what he was being asked to do. And when he does end up centrally, I mean, he just causes so many problems.
And
I think that's the key, is you have Parrott, you have Ogbeni, and he does operate off that left a bit, but I think in the same way it works as Southampton, he plays it in the 10 and Cienza plays off the left. And if you look at their heat maps, Azaz's heat map ends up on the left-hand side, and Cienzas ends up in the middle. And that's fine. He can drift out to the left. He's effective drifting out to the left from the middle, but from the left coming into the middle, he's wasted, I think, and he gets stuck out there. And he doesn't have the pace to go and beat a man.
No, I think, you need your most creative players as well, kind of closer to Parrott, if we can. Speaking of the left-hand side of the team, we've mentioned, obviously, just in passing, that Ryan Manning has done quite well over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Is he the man to start left-wing back?
I think so. Yeah. I know Liam Scales is suspended, and he kind of started there against Hungary in our last game. It was okay. He was very good against Portugal. But it was okay against Hungary, and I wouldn't be doing that even if he was available for selection. You're looking at Ryan Manning or Robbie Brady, who returned to action for Preston at the weekend. Came off the bench, played a half an hour. Game was done. Really, by the time he came on, they were well beaten. He was on the bench the weekend prior, but obviously didn't get out onto the field. So it's between the two of them. And it's a decision that has to be made. It's interesting because Robbie Brady, of course, was our player of the year before he got injured for the Republic of Ireland, of course. And he admits that was his first appearance for Preston this season. So can you get match fit in the space of 2 or 3 weeks? Well, no better place than the Championship.
Yeah,
you're
going
to be, probably has 5 or 6 games between now and then. But personally, yeah, I think it's Ryan Manning.
Yeah. Manning or Brady?
I think it's just come a bit too soon for Robbie Brady, isn't it? If he'd another month, I think he could have put himself into the conversation a little bit more. The only thing I will preface that by saying is that Hamer Helgrimsson loves Robbie Brady.
Does, yeah. Yeah.
And Robbie Brady was so key to the way Helgrimsson wanted to set up Ireland at first, with those kind of little interlinks down the left-hand side, Brady linking up with a left-handed centre fielder, and then that kind of left forward... Left-sided.
We're actually talking about left and right hands all morning here.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't here, so there you go. Forgive me for that.
Yeah.
That kind of role that Azaz would play, or Smolik's has played it before, where it's on the left-hand side, that's what I was trying to get at, and you move inside to left central midfield and you link up with Brady and the left central midfielder. That was what Hamer Helgrimsson's, I suppose, plan was when he came at first, to use those triangles down the left and right hand side. And Brady was a real key outlet for that, because he's so good on the ball. He can kind of play in centre field. He's done it before. He was a key asset to the way Hamer wanted to play. I just think, I know Manning didn't even start, it was Scales that started left wing back, but I just think Moira Manning is now associated with those games, and I think he's been playing consistently at a decent level with Southampton. I just think it's come a little bit too soon for Rob Brady. If this game was in the mythical April or in the mythical March, we might have seen Robbie Brady.
Yeah.
I just think it's too soon.
He'll definitely be in the squad without a doubt. Like, I know you're not suggesting he won't, but the thing with Ryan Manning is it's not luck in a sense, but he went through a period there where he wasn't playing at all over the last, within like the last 2 months. It's only the last kind of 3 or 4 weeks he's come back in after that game where they were 3-0 down. Leicester came back and won 4-3, and he came on and scored one of those goals, and he's kept his place since, and he's been excellent. Before you go, you mentioned Robbie Brady playing in midfield before. Is there any chance he plays in midfield against the Czech Republic?
No.
I don't think he has the legs, unfortunately. So. It's a run back after big Thomas Soucek. Yeah,
who literally will not stop running.
Yeah. Just before we move on from that,
Jason Lumley gets a hold of him, which I'm sure he'll be trying to
cut him in two. Just before we move on, I know Alex Murphy made a very positive Champions League appearance last week for Newcastle. We don't think he'll be involved in the squad, but is that the future of the left-sided position for Ireland? Because we actually are lacking in left-sided players, aren't we?
Yeah, I'd love to see Alex Murphy get a run in consistent games. Probably doesn't happen at Newcastle, to be honest. I was talking to someone involved in football at Galway United a couple of weeks ago, it was actually the day after Murphy played, and he told me, you know, if he was from Dublin, he'd be on the plane to check out, which I thought was quite a funny remark. But
It's a funny remark.
It's a funny remark because
absolute rubbish.
Well, it is a funny remark. Yeah, but it's classic like Galway thinking,
media.
Isn't it? The pale. But I did think it was funny. You know, he sent me that, and then he said, "Name any other Irish players who've played in the knockout round." It's just Champions League. I was like, "Right, fair enough." I'd love to see Alex Murphy get a consistent run of games. Yeah. Probably at a championship club is realistically where this is going to come from.
Or the continent.
I'd be interested to see what happens with his contract situation. I think his contract's up at 2028, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see what happens in the summer. Does he get a permanent move? If you put yourself on a showcase like in a Champions League game, if he plays a couple of games for Newcastle towards the end of the season.
Well, it's heading that way in that they look like they're going to have a good couple of dead rubbers come the end of the season, so there's an opportunity there for them to be thrown in. Well, they're just kind of just floating around mid-table.
And they have quite a light squad. But in fairness, they are 13th and Newcastle can still push for European places, which they will be.
I'm sure they'll be trying to do that.
Within a shout for something that I completely forgot to mention to you two lads before we done this was...
What's he laughing at?
It's James McCarthy. Just coming to my head there. Do you ever see that thing when he's in a press conference for Celtic and he hadn't played in like a year and they're like, "How are you keeping fit?" And he's like, "I was training, played a couple of games here and there." Every time someone says "couple of games," it's all day.
Okay,
he was in my head this week already.
Because he's in the Fanatics
thing with Everton. He's in my head.
He was talking about that with the lads this morning. I went on and I was like, "I'll have a look at these jerseys here." And they had the promo picture with Paul McGrath in it. They won from every club. I can't remember.
Niall Quinn, Paul McGrath.
Leeds.
Who was the Leeds? It was Ian Hart.
Yes. And then in the front is James McCarthy. And I was
for Everton.
Yeah.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, and I was like, I was actually scrolling through actively just like, I'm like, No way.
And they did so well to track him then.
That's what I said. That's what I said. I was like, that's actually a thing, and that like he's just not about, is he? Like,
yeah, he's too busy training. Yeah. Played a couple of games.
Admiring his FA Cup medal from 2013.
Yeah, fair play. Probably shining it.
Yeah, I think it's a big, big moment.
The League of Ireland is live and exclusive again this Friday on Off the Ball. There's still time here. Last Friday night, the champions were battered by arch-rivals Bohemians.
Rovers haven't been good enough.
It was a late, late show, and to whom it may concern, Bradley's boys made sure this week's opponents were duly warned.
Aaron Green has made it 3-2, a game that was over.
Pretenders to the throne, Derry City came from behind to beat Waterford's, with a couple of late ones themselves, and talisman Mikey Duffy struck again.
Picked up by Mikey Duffy. Really well.
On Friday, the Candy Stripes come to Dublin, looking to throw the gauntlet down to Rovers. Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City at Tallaght Stadium is live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 this Friday on News Talk and the Go Loud app.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
Trent Conor-Doherty has left.
Oh, Ben, Liverpool. I'd say you love this.
And he's gone to... Is it part of the European continent?
No, it's not part of the European Union. They're in the European agreement, but they're not the European Union.
It counts as the continent, though. Like, surely.
It's the continent. It's like Scandinavia.
It's the continent in this context.
So Trent Conor-Doherty is a Derryman and Liverpool academy product, and he's made quite a big decision to go and join Molde in Norway. Ben, our European correspondent, what do you
think?
Don't
put me on such a high pedestal. I wish. Yeah, well, I think it's... Well, look, to leave an academy, he needed to leave the academy. Yeah. That was the number one thing that needed to happen. To go to a club, I would presume if he's going there for 750,000, they've told him you're going to play first team football. Mm. You'd have to imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
They've given him some sort of assurances and promises that he will feature in the first team. It's a great move. It's a club they're going to be challenging at top Norwegian division.
Is it the same level as a League of Ireland club?
It is slightly above
Shamrock Rovers.
I know, yeah, I remember just when I got beaten by them.
Yeah,
the Conference League, it's slightly above it.
They're spending a lot more cash than League of Ireland,
a hell of a lot more money. So
they have a TV deal.
The TV deal, which is worth like 40 million, like
a season. I know, but
internal football, it's ridiculous. No, look, it is a level above. There's no two ways about it, and probably the intensity and the physicality might show up a little bit more when you play up there. I think it's a great move. I think Trent Conor-Doherty is going to have an interesting decision on his hands as well over the next couple of maybe months.
Do you reckon?
I've heard the Ivory Coast are
keeping an eye on him.
Keeping a close eye and club tracking him. That's what I've heard anyway.
Definitely want to keep an eye on him, for sure.
We did mention this last week that we actually did want to talk about Bodo Glimt and whether they would be the kind of model that Irish clubs should kind of look towards. We'll come back to that again in kind of a future episode and a bit more of a deep dive.
Rear his head once again.
They are playing in the Champions League in a few weeks. But like for Molde, for Trent Conor-Doherty,
Molde actually play Bodo in 2 days.
Okay, there you go. Keep an eye.
Watch that.
He can play now. The window's still open. You can play right now.
Yeah, the season's only starts in the next.
Their window closes in April.
Yeah. So, like, they're playing against teams like Brann, Rosenborg, Bodo Glimt, obviously, Tromso, Vålerenga, Viking, who are actually the champions, funny enough.
Yeah.
So, that is a very interesting move for Trent Conor-Doherty. Probably involved in an Irish under 21 squad.
In
the next couple of weeks. One last thing as well that it just kind of broke as we were kind of finishing last week was Chris Atherton.
Yeah.
Has changed his allegiance from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland. Maybe that name rings a bell for you. He was one of the youngest ever footballers, I think, to make his professional debut for Glenavon. I think he was 13 or something, was he? Yeah.
He was 13?
He was even 14, and he made his debut. He's obviously gone to Chelsea.
What the hell is that about, by the way? That's mental.
It was in the Bet McLean Cup.
Yeah, the Bet McLean Cup. Yeah. Which is, the final has VAR in it.
I know.
Is that this week? Or
VAR coming to the NFL.
Game is gone.
Probably should have checked that. But
It's coming to League World soon. Enjoy it while you can.
I don't think so. Anyway, so that's it seems like a big coup for Ireland. Unfortunately, Chris Atherton and his family has got horrific abuse on social media. But it was a personal decision that he made and his family made, and he'll be representing Ireland in the next international window. Yeah, I guess it's been done.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to touch
on.
A lot of
abuse came from the fact that people were saying that he'd kind of used and abused the system to kind of get to where he is, in actual fact, he had played a lot of the underage emerging talent type things in the Republic, but being from where he's from, yeah. it didn't make logistical sense for him to be travelling up and down the country yeah. at the age he was at.
Yeah.
So he just decided to...
Yeah.
And to be fair, like, yeah, I get it. Obviously, we would have the same bit of... I don't know what the word, a bit of angst or a bit of frustration around it happening, but like the abuse is just ridiculous. I mean, he's still a kid at the end of the day. Like, come on.
It is ridiculous. And the JD Sports Academy also plays a lot into the factor of these players where they kind of play in their youth. But it, like, his dad had to come out to the media and say, look, he made this, the kid made a decision by himself.
Yeah.
It was a personal decision. He wants to represent his own country, which he feels like is Ireland. Mm. He's a kid, like, he's still under 18 years of age.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just wonder, what has gone to your head to hop online and abuse it? A child, you know.
Yeah, well, like there's idiots all over social media. I called them out in a previous episode. They haven't come back to me since. Anyway, moving on swiftly from that. Just as one thing I wanted to mention, that Owen Elding has continued his sensational form for Hibernian, and I know for a fact that his process of declaring for Ireland is still in the works, and it will be happening. I think in the next couple of weeks, I think Jim Crawford will be very keen to get him into an under 21 squad in the next few weeks. But he's still flying.
Yeah, unbelievable. And his header again the weekend, like, he's just scoring those headers. Like, and he's the confidence. He's brimming with confidence too. Yeah. 3 starts in a row, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Before you can come back to Elding in 2 seconds, I just wanted to mention another man who was kind of in that conversation with Owen Elding at the time when at the last couple of international breaks in terms of getting his allegiance sorted was Jack Morehouse, who is popping up very regularly on the Manchester United bench.
Yeah,
and Mike Carrick.
Yeah, and ahead of Shea Lacy, interestingly.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, he's strange one because he was at Leighton Orient.
Another Irish eligible man.
Yeah. He was at Leighton Orient at the start of the season and had been playing regularly enough, not maybe what United would have been hoping for. Leighton Orient struggling, weren't expected to be struggling, and got recalled on deadline day, I think. Back to Manchester United because Leighton Orient made a couple of signings. United felt as though he wasn't going to get the minutes that they wanted him to get. So went back to United and was training, playing with the senior squad, and now he's making the bench. So not quite the same as Owen Elding. Not quite doing it on the pitch, but good signs, I suppose, for both of them guys. And Jack Morris, I think, has been in 21 squad since. Obviously, Owen Elding hasn't just yet, but hopefully he continues that form. Good Irish contingent of Hibs, too.
No, Shea Lacy's brother is the left-back from Maxfield.
Yeah.
Luis Lacy. What a name. Like Luis Suarez, like Lacy.
The less said about
from Liverpool. The other brother was say less about. But Owen Elding, I don't want to. Owen Elding is a fantastic footballer. Really, really fantastic footballer. I'm so delighted that he made a move to a club that maybe when you're over in England, it seems like it's a big step up, but it's really not. Like, the level is not that far off the level that it is here.
Yeah. Well, so I think it's more the maybe the levels. I think like Owen Doyle made a great point on, it must have been a couple of weeks ago or maybe it was on Football Saturday, about like the difference that he had, because he obviously made the same move, and he said like Owen Elding is like far and beyond the level that Owen Doyle was physically. That when he made the move, I think Owen Doyle made the move and he's like 21 or 22 and Elding's still 18, 19?
He's 19. 19, I think he might be
20. So yeah, I think this is like, has he done really well here to like kind of...
Yeah, no, he has. He has.
Not go too big.
There's no two ways about it. Like, he's done really well going over. He's done really well with the move and whoever's advising him. It's a brilliant move. Like, he would have known going over there, I can really smash this. Like, he would have been fully confident in his own capabilities, as he should be. He's a smashing footballer. It's brilliant to see that when you look at that maybe in from a UK lens or UK narrative, he's gone from playing in front of maybe 3,000 a week in the showgrounds to playing at Easter Road in front of 12, 14,000 every week. He's going to look a hell of a lot better when it's on TV and it's a full finished product. I think whoever is advising him and his own, obviously it's his own decision as well. It's not just someone advising him. He's gone at that and gone, I can smash that. And he has. Yeah. And he will continue. I have full faith that he will continue to do so.
I think so. He's a bit of X factor about him. Can I mention one more man on the continent actually before you
go
any further? Very quickly. Joe Hodge, a name everyone would be very familiar with.
This is really interesting because I was just telling you that I kind of follow him on FootMob and I see he's plays and then he doesn't play and then his ratings aren't so good. But go on, tell us about
people that don't know about Joe Hodge very quickly. Obviously, was at Manchester City, very important part of a lot of the underage Ireland squads, was touted to be the next big thing, really. Went to Wolves, didn't play as much as maybe he would have liked, and is now over with Tondela in the Liga NOS, the top division over in Portugal. They're a newly promoted side and kind of had a tough start to the league. season. He was in, he was out, he was playing 90 minutes and then he was dropped and then he was injured and his minutes were being managed and he was playing a half here and an hour here and a half an hour here, and played a couple of weeks ago in a game and they were losing. He got taken off at half time. But since then, things have turned for him. He got an assist at the weekend. They drew. He played the full 90, first full 90 I've seen him playing in quite some time. And he's played over an hour, which is sort of the benchmark for what we say of, like, you know, he's getting good minutes if you're playing over an hour week in, week out. He's played over an hour in each of the last five games. And the key point being that they're unbeaten across those last five games. And I think moved himself just out of relegation zone. If they're not just out of it, they're in it on goal difference. So things are turning from there. And it looked like it wasn't going to be the best of seasons for him. But over the last couple of weeks, it's turned from, and look, not that it's anything of immediate note, you know, as regard the Republic of Ireland national team, but definitely want to keep an eye on, because the talent Joe Hodge has is, it knows no bounds, in my opinion.
I remember when he went to Derry City and it was like a huge kind of coup and it was like, this could be, you know, the move that kicks him on. Unfortunately, he just struggled really a lot with injuries, didn't he?
Yeah, I remember when that move came about and everyone was like, oh, great, he's definitely going to declare for Ireland now.
Yeah.
He won't declare for England, which was the big worry at the time, because he is a smashing footballer. I was actually looking at that relegation battle the other day. They're up against Shamrock Rovers, old pals, Santa Clara
down there. That's who they drew with at the weekend. Yeah. They drew with them, won all the weekend.
Which I thought was quite funny, which also kind of gives you an indication of the standards that he's playing at. Mm. Obviously, when you play against Benfica, Porto, Braga.
I picked up a good result against one of them.
And Sporting, you're playing
Porto, I think, maybe drew it.
You're playing at a good level there, but maybe just an inside Portugal outside of those top four teams.
Of course, that's always been
It always has been. It never really will. Sometimes Vitória Guimarães can be okay.
Yeah, they had a good season last year.
Mikey Johnson. I'm playing at 67.
Or Mikey, big loss.
Season five, episode five of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast focuses on Mikey Johnson's move. Nearly move from West Brom.
Season five.
I tell you what, we've actually had quite a few comments in about, like, people saying, oh, what about this move and that move? So there is definitely scope for more series.
Yeah. You might want to start, pay me a bit more to be doing them promo videos if we're five seasons deep.
So we're looking for a videographer and social media expert.
I joke.
That is an interesting thing. It's an interesting place to go to develop your game, Portugal. I know, like, we have our hang-ups about that one when we compare people who move from the Liga NOS to, like, the Premier League, for example, and the standards. But in an ever-changing kind of...
The type of place you imagine suiting someone like Joe Hodge.
Yeah, and as well, like, European football is changing so much, and, like, Benfica, Porto, Sporting, Celtic, Ajax, all those clubs aren't the actual powerhouses that they were, because there's one Super League and it's the Premier League. So it's definitely a good avenue to go and explore and develop your game.
Yeah, for sure.
Just very quickly, there's a story here in the Sun from Owen Couser. The FAI has revamped Ireland's youth coaching setup, with new gaffers potentially staying with teams through the age groups. So, simply, it looks like the FAI Director of Football, John Martin, is kind of rolling out some new appointments. The roles are fixed-term contracts rather than permanent positions, similar to what the senior men's and women's head coaching roles are. And it's understood that the five roles will be advertised in the coming weeks after five head coaching and assistant coaching roles were recently filled. James Scott started his new role as women's under 17 coach after having held the position last year. So I guess it's good news that there are more coaches being hired in the FAI and more maybe help for each individual or each age group going up the ages as well. I guess it's an interesting, they have to, obviously the FAI have had to restructure a lot of different things, money wise and different things, but that is definitely some positive developments.
Yeah, this is something that we already see at a number of League of Ireland clubs, where coaches are going, and again, they're often volunteers. Only recently they've been kind of being given permanent contracts due to funding coming in, where they'll take an age group from under 13s and they'll stay with them and they'll compete with them in all the cups, like the Marfan Cup, under 15s, under 17s, under 19s. They'll stay with the same team the whole way up, which is exactly what we should be doing at international level. It happens in other federations already.
Yeah, it like says French and Spanish federations work where managers move between age groups. So the major change in Libya, head coaches will not have specific age groups.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I have to take...
So there won't be an under-17s manager?
Yeah. So that would mean that the under-15s manager would take his team to under-17s.
Yeah.
The under-17 manager take his team to under-19s and then he'd go back to the start.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. just the initial thing, the only cause for concern or something that would jump to me, and I'd have to think about it a bit more and do a bit more research into it, but I would always think that the more eyes you have on, or the different array of eyes that you have on a group of players, can only be a good thing. And if you've got the same eyes looking at the same players all the time, I think maybe the odd player might slip through the cracks. I know that happens anyway, but I'm sure that's something they've thought about, but it just kind of sprung to my head there that, you know, if what I deem a talented player might not be what you deem a talented player, and we could both be right.
That, can I just say quickly, that does happen in a lot of sports. I know basketball is really bad for that in Ireland, where a coach will stay with the same age group for a couple of years, and if a coach has favourites, like I've seen it firsthand in my own club, like if a coach has favourites, it can really have detrimental consequences on players who are have all the capabilities in the world.
The first thing I think about this is actually Luis De La Fuente, the current Spain manager, because he's done something similar where he's gone, maybe he wasn't such a big name, I don't really know his playing career, but he had a fairly, let's say, limited playing career, and he went all the way from 15s all the way up to now obviously the senior coach, and now he's probably one of the best, one of the top managers.
Mad, he's 64, like, he doesn't look a bit
in the world. Very, very
slow style, isn't it?
Yeah. 146 game for Athletic Bilbao, I suppose, to be fair.
Yeah, no, maybe it's not bad.
I didn't know that. I'm not claiming to know that or try hanging out the dry here. I just said I'd have a look and see what the crack was. But
yeah.
On this week's episode of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors, centres on how Mikey Johnson could have swapped the English Midlands for the beaches of Rio de Janeiro. Yes, Republic of Ireland winger Mikey Johnson was on the verge of a move to one of the biggest clubs in Brazil, in Flamengo. But why did it fall by the wayside? Find out in this week's episode of Sliding Doors, coming to you free each and every Monday. Subscribe in your OTB football podcast feed to not miss an episode of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
Very quickly before we wrap up, we'll just go through some of the fan questions. Smodex, we wrapped up. Front three against the Czechs. Ogie, 1997, with the likes of Hodge, Corey Ndaba and Garcia McNulty all playing first team football in good leagues. Do you reckon that they could get into squads?
Well, Corey Ndaba is going to have to play a lot more football, I would say. I saw he started at the weekend and got taken off at half time.
Did.
Yeah.
Fletcher in their loss. Was it Como they were playing?
I think so, yeah.
And they lost. So I think a little bit more football probably needed there. And Samuel Garcia McNulty is probably someone who is banging on the door. Yeah. Senior call up.
He's thereabouts. Yeah. I wouldn't have much more to add there. Although, just on Ndaba, I think he's eligible for South Africa. So maybe he might get there before us.
South Africa always get him in my football manager saves.
Not really.
And if I like ask him to represent Ireland, he always chooses South Africa every single time.
Corey.
Yeah.
Maybe
they know something we don't.
Balls in your court,
Miles Jacobson and the rest of the boys know something we don't know.
Yeah.
A couple other things. Love the pods. Keep it going. Fair play. Oh, that's in from Mam actually. So I'll leave that to one side. It's 100 days out from the World Cup today as we record. This is like a non-Irish specific question, but what's the one player or one thing you're most looking forward to? Like, let's leave all the geopolitics out of it and the cartel wars.
Yes!
And the safety concerns and the price of the tickets and the price of accommodation. Not even having fan zones.
Let's just pretend this is a made-up competition.
Let's just forget everything that's happening.
Let's pretend it's a football manager save and we're just focusing on the tournament. You know, one thing we probably need to talk about in the future is that basically there's been no money provided for any of the host cities to have fan zones. So if you're going to go and not be able to afford a ticket and think you're going to go and watch the game somewhere, I don't know if that's going to be happening.
Find the Irish bar.
But yeah, so Ben, I know I'm putting you on the spot and this is kind of part of it. what player or thing you're most looking forward to for this year's World Cup?
Because
it is
thing.
The bloody best tournament.
I'll tell you what, right? Off the top of my head, and this is only because I was actually thinking of this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Igor Thiago start up top for Brazil.
Oh,
that's what I am like. That's what I'm
Irish connection
dying
there,
to see. Like, I'm dying to see. I think Igor Thiago gets so much disrespect. Like, he's way more technical.
Does he?
He's way more. people see big burly centre half or centre forward. No way, he's Brazilian. He's not like, you know, your Neymar. Like, if you think of the front three of Brazil, right? You've got Neymar, Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo,
Paquetá.
You have got Paquetá. You've got you've got Richarlison. Like, who's maybe not on the level of the others.
Yeah,
but he's very different striker to Igor Thiago. Igor Thiago is so technical. I would love to see him play up top for Brazil. I actually think it could work for them, having Vinicius and it looks like Neymar as well. We saw Rodrigo.
Oh, yeah.
Rodrigo came out today and called for Neymar to be in the squad. Yeah. I'm interested to see how they get on. First time Brazil will ever have in a World Cup a non-Brazilian manager.
Mm-hmm. Don Carlo.
Brazilian football just outside is an absolute mess at the moment. Felipe Luiz sacked this morning.
Yeah, Felipe Luis, man, I want to see him closer home. I want to keep an eye on what he's doing.
Yeah,
I reckon
yeah.
he's got a bit about him.
Yeah.
He won the Copa Libertadores in the Brazilian league.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Obviously,
and
not
the Super Cup of Brazil before losing the two. Yeah. Basically,
I will say that Flamengo are super super powerful. They paid like £35 million for Lucas Paqueta.
Yeah.
So like
this is Club World Cup money has fueled these clubs, but the top clubs in Brazil.
That Club World Cup money actually hasn't been released yet. I saw the Guardian.
They're spending it.
Flamengo.
Just like the Celtic Tiger.
The two clubs in the Copa Libertadores final last year, one made $190 million and the other made $180 million, which is unheard of in Brazil. Like that's net revenue they've made in the last year. Unheard of in Brazil.
Yeah, and Brazilian clubs are like dominating South American club football.
Yeah. Like, and they're selling players like Ryan.
Yeah, Argentinian football, Uruguayan football, Colombian football are can't even sniff getting close to them.
Flamengo did lose to Lanús in the
which is
part of the reason why Felipe Luis has been sacked. So Flamengo lost to Lanús in basically the equivalent of the Super Cup.
Yeah.
The winner of the Sudamerica versus the winner of the Libertadores.
Yeah.
And then Felipe Luis had a massive scrap with the overlords at Flamengo and he's gone. And they won 8-0 last night in his final game. And he came out to his press conference after and said, like, you know, I've enjoyed my time at the club, but, you know, I'm going. And it's basically, he's been kicked out of the club. Like, he's been sacked. Mental. But anyway, back to the original point.
Here to the Igor Thiago
in a front three with Neymar and Vinicius Jr. with Carlo Ancelotti at the helm.
No, I like that.
Lanús are...
in case you were wondering.
Known as El Granate. Garnet. I didn't see them play when they weren't so good. They're like traditionally they're not traditionally they're not a big side actually. Their Clásico, right? Their Clásico is against Banfield.
Yeah,
their Clásico is against Banfield, right? And you smart fella. And I actually not to blow my own trumpet again, but I was in the gym last week and there was a guy wearing a Banfield shirt and I said, oh, you're a Banfield fan? He was like, yeah, like how do you know that? And I was like, oh, like James Rodriguez, like, he played for you. And he was like, yeah, like back in 2009. So in Dublin, there are Banfield fans.
Banfield is a hilarious name. That has to be a club in the Niffle.
Banfield. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. That's only up to Bleeding Road. Like.
Banfield.
Yeah. Right, okay, Matthew, what's the one thing you're looking for?
I don't have Anton half as elaborate as that. No, I like... I'm intrigued to see how I myself, on a personal level, manage to deal with.
Managed to get to Mexico.
Trying to watch as much World Cup football as possible in the extended format while also being up for work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Seeing how that goes. Seeing if I survive.
Yeah.
While not being over there, because that'd be another thing. Be
you know, you could just change your clock to like go sleep as soon as you come from
work.
Wake up for like the 9 o'clock game.
Yeah,
could, but there's other stuff going on, you know.
What's more important than football is life?
There's nothing more important.
As Pádraig Joyce said, there's more to life than football.
Yeah, the GA Intercounty.
It's actually brilliant to you, but come on now, yeah. I did think that when I listened to that as well, you know.
So the thing I'm most looking forward to, or the thing I hope to see the most, is Keith Andrews in an ITV studio.
Oh yeah.
Somewhere in the US or Mexico.
Copying Thomas Frank.
Analysing Ireland at the World Cup and doing Thomas Frank on it. Wouldn't that be brilliant?
Yeah, it would be.
Keith Andrews, formerly of Off the Ball.
Doing a Danny Roll on it.
It has to be ITV because BBC aren't sending anyone over.
Yeah.
Not until the quarterfinals, isn't it?
If Keith's already over there, they might zoom him in.
Well, a couple of the rest of his football ads are going over and the BBC have to come out and say, like, you're funding your own way over there, basically, which is grand because Netflix will just pay them how much money they want.
Yeah.
Rest of football ads go over there. But I'd like to see that. Keith Andrews and but that just wouldn't happen, surely. Keith Andrews and Roy Keane in the same studio.
Yeah, sure. Roy Keane and Patrick.
Martin O'Neill will be there.
Yeah, Roy Keane and Patrick Kerr are in the same studio.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
I would love to see some more Martin. Martin O'Neill, he's been back in management.
Yeah, I want to see him now.
I want to see more of those. Like, remember the Cannavaro and
Stan
Patrick
Village.
Vieira with I've got two of these in the back pocket. Yeah, like, I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah.
Now that he's been back in management again.
Okay, so it's time is against us here, but one thing I will just add here is that
Richard Kone, who is an EFL player. He is.
There's a point to me there. Nice one.
He's the EFL correspondent. He's the European correspondent.
I've seen Richard Kone this season.
I actually have seen him in flesh, to be fair.
Not many
players experience both the homeless World Cup, Cardiff 2019, and an actual World Cup. But Kone has the chance to do this in Rare Double. I'm reading this in the Athletics, 100 players to watch. His rise in the initial appearance in South Wales is signing for Athletic Newham in the Essex Senior League, then Wycombe Wanderers. And now he's in the Championship with Queen's Park Rangers. He only has a single cap for the for Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast.
Athletic Newham, I think, have like the Atletico Madrid badge. It's their own. I think it used to be called, like, Lopez Tavares or something.
But that is why this football. Yeah. That's why we love the World Cup. We love stories like that. Like, that is incredible. If someone goes to play from a homeless World Cup, to playing at the actual World Cup.
That's cool.
And, like, let's try and kind of end on a positive note in the week that's just been.
I had something I was going to add, but it's not positive, so I'll leave it. It's all good.
Yeah, put that in the back pocket. Yeah. We're just here for positive vibes only. So
it's about time.
I have a positive thing.
Go on.
About the homeless World Cup. Michael Sheen bankrupted him. The Welsh actor bankrupted himself to fund that. They pulled the plug. The plug got pulled on that about 6 to 8 weeks before it took place, and he was already kind of all in as, like, the main person promoting it, investing it, and he bankrupted himself. He listed his two houses. He'd one in Wales and he'd one, I think, in LA. Mm-hmm. And he listed them both up and said, I'll give you every single bit I have. Yeah. So that's why if you ever see him now, he's in so many, like, ads, TV shows, everything. And he's publicly come out and said, I'm making my money back.
What an actor, by the way.
Unbelievable actor.
Damned United, when he plays Brian Clough, is pretty sensational. Mm. Let's kind of end on a positive note. We have the Irish women's national team playing this evening against France, Talis Stadium. Stephen Doyle will be joined by Olivia O'Toole in the gantry for that one. There's live commentary from Off the Ball on News Talk from 7 on your radios and the Go Loud app. Football Daily is in your feeds for free every 1 to 2 o'clock with your latest football news from the League of Ireland to Premier League to everywhere else in between. Matthew Brennan had recorded an episode of Green Scene.
We did, yeah.
The old Green Scene.
Yeah.
And it's in your podcast feed now. What's coming up for the rest of the week on...
Is this your positive? I thought you had a positive
story. His positive thing was...
Richard Kone.
Yeah, it was Richard Kone. And now he's just rapping. And he's just asked you what's
coming up for me? I'll be at Shelburne versus St Patrick's Athletic. I'll have League of Ireland late night with Shane Keegan as usual on Friday night, and Vinnie Perth hopped in momentarily. Shane's Wi-Fi was dropping and Vinnie sent me a text. He said, let me in. And myself and Vinnie did it together.
That's class.
And then we'll also have commentary, live commentary from Friday of Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City.
Stephen Doyle, the biggin.
Richie Tell live from Talis Stadium at 7 o'clock on Friday. So a huge week of League of Ireland action. And I hopefully will be at Shelburne versus Shamrock Rovers on Monday. So Shamrock Rovers is another huge back-to-back like they had versus St. Patrick's Athletic and Dundalk. Lads, Monday football. You just can't beat a bit of Monday League of Ireland football. It's such a treat.
I was in Richmond Park last night to watch Pats and Galway, and it was a really good game, but Keane Levy, what a player he is, by the way.
I was at Dave last night.
Oh yeah. How'd you get those tickets?
I know people in the industry.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it was great.
Keane Levy last night and on Friday fulfilled the Maradona prophecy.
I'm not even going to speak on that. If you're still listening to that to our podcast, thank you very much. Remember, give us 5 stars in the old App Store or the Apple Podcast, or give us, you know, rate us, share us. You know, if you're down, you know, collecting the kids from school, you're going off to the gym, you're at your local football team, you know, go, lads, I just heard this, and girls, obviously, I just heard about this new Irish football podcast. It's for free and off the ball. It's called Outside the Box for now. And we'll be back.
Went to South America.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks very much. Talk to you then.